Dear Sugar is supported by
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Steve, sweetheart.
Darling.
Do you remember last year we called our spouses on Valentine's Day?
Yes, but we're not going to call our spouses this time around. We're going to do something that's more in keeping with the letters that we receive, kind of what comes in from the world. And Valentine's Day is defined as this day of consecrating of love, but that's not the nature of the letters that we receive. In fact, the letters that we receive are most of the time, almost all the time, much more anguished about the love interest in their life. And as we thought about it, we thought, well, what is the one relationship that is the most forbidden and pervasive, almost anti-Valentine's Day in a way, and that is the relationship of a crush. Because a crush is, by its definition, overwhelming desire that's smashing up against total anguish and doubt. So we're going to talk about forbidden crushes for Valentine's Day. How anti-Valentine's Day is that?
I know. It's kind of a dark Valentine's Day. Yeah. And I will say a shout out to listeners who are sort of shaking their heads right now and saying, that's not what a crush is. It's not so dark. It's not so forbidden.
Right.
And I think that when we think about what crushes are, there's definitely a continuum, a range, a variation of what we mean when we say that word. I think when I think of crushes I've had, they aren't so dark. They're that kind of thrill or that zing. Several years ago when I was in graduate school living in Syracuse, New York, there was this guy who worked in the deli at the Wegmans. And it was right after Brian and I had just got married. And I had that feeling of like, oh, he thinks I'm cute, which then made me think he was cute. But it was so innocent that I said to Brian, oh, the deli guy and I, you know, have this little crush on each other. And of course, it was never anything I wanted to act on. It wasn't full of anguish and longing and any of these emotions that you were referring to or that we're going to visit and discuss in these letters we're going to discuss today. So we want to acknowledge that we understand that crushes can be just good romantic fun.
Yes.
But we're going to dig a little deeper, as we tend to do on Dear Sugar Radio today.
Interestingly, what you're describing, yeah, I guess it's a crush, but like I really think of crushes as crushing experiences. Hmm. When I think of the crushes that I've had in my life, I made a little list of them when I knew we were going to do this episode, and every single one crushed me. I absolutely was completely certain that I wanted to be with this, in these case, women. But, you know, there's lots of friendship crushes and literary crushes. But it's the combination of desire and maybe admiration with an intuitive sense that this person is not going to reciprocate, or there's a great deal of doubt. That I think of the crush as inherently something that's like impossible love, forbidden love.
So tell us the story of one of your crushes.
Well, I absolutely fell head over, was it love? Yes, I was in love with a woman at the end of my college career. I was dating somebody else. This woman like was attracted to me a little bit, but I was like, I'd been gaga for her for 4 years of college and just never thought it was possible to get with her, and sort of secretly nurturing it. And then she broke up with a guy and was a little bit more available. So we had a wonderful, in my view, wonderful one-night stand. And I can remember walking across, like, you know, the walk of shame. I had the walk of elation. I was like, oh my God, I just did it. And this woman is going to be the one I'm with. I know it. I remember driving a long way to another college with her and talking the whole way and thinking, like, I'm in love with this woman's mind. I love that she has a sense of humor. I love that she's tough, whatever. I was in. And I held that torch, Cheryl, for 2 more years. Like, I would wait the summer afterwards, I would wait for the mail to arrive at this little newspaper where I was working, hoping that she had sent me a postcard. Mm-hmm. And I went to Boston and visited and had a very sad, disappointing meal with her, where I basically said, I've come here to tell you this is like, you're it for me. And she had to just look at me and say, this is not what you think. I think of you as like a friend. And that is sort of at the bottom for me of the feeling of a crush. You're going to get crushed by it because you feel this incredible desire and the other person just doesn't. Crushes are the receptacles of our, you know, conscious and unconscious desires. When I wanted to get married, I had a tremendous, huge, throbbing crush on a happily married woman. When I wanted to have kids, before I was married but feeling the itch to have kids, who did I have a crush on? I had a crush on a woman who had just, you know, had a beautiful, but I mean, just totally inappropriate. All of these women, I didn't have a crush on them. I had a crush on what I needed and, you know, what I wanted, or and sometimes even what I thought I wanted, mm-hmm. you know, and you're not even judging them for who they are, but you're utterly convinced that you are. When I fell for this woman in college, I had a whole idea of how our life was going to be together. To me, it was very clear in my mind that she was the one. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that she was the one, it was that I decided that she was. I'm over it though, Cheryl.
Jesus, Steve.
I know. Well, you asked.
you found your way out. You know what? I'm proud of you, brother. I'm happy that you're here.
Yeah.
And here you are. You're happily married. Now you survived this whole thing with the car and the college campus. I'm really glad you made it through.
This is what crushes do, though. I know you just dig men who adore you, but for the rest of us out there who find inappropriate, unattainable love objects, that's who we're going to hear from today.
Right.
And that's 99% of us.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's really fascinating that I and all of the Dear Sugar Radio universe, the listeners, we've sort of patched together, for both of us probably, our romantic background, our sexual background, and psychologically, you know, how we came to be the people we are. And I think it's really interesting to listen to you tell this story about your crushes and for me to say, you know, I've never had a crush like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing you've told us over and over again in various contexts in response to various themes and letters and topics and so forth is this dynamic that you have that goes back probably to your very beginning. Sort of seeking rejection. And what I seek is approval mm-hmm. and love. Mm-hmm. And I think we're both seeking the same thing in the end. But, you know, when I'm trying to trace back the beginnings of my crushes, so often it begins actually with the other person.
Right.
Like, I get a crush on somebody who has a crush on me.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this
mm-hmm.
fascinating?
Yes.
So then when I say, well, my fetish, you know, I always joke, like, my fetish is men who adore me. Well, it begins with also having crushes on people who already have a crush on me.
Right.
Okay?
Right. See, that's the safety and security.
That's right.
Yeah.
I actually avoid that kind of rejection at every turn. Mm-hmm. And so I don't bring it to me. And you get some sort of power out of that rejection, some sort of affirmation.
Yeah.
It's a negative affirmation. It's a power that feels powerless.
Mm-hmm.
But you get something from it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Just like I do. And neither is right or wrong or better. You know, mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing to note about yourself.
Yeah.
And that's, I hope our listeners will do that too. Think about, like, what is the history of not just the relationships you've had,
right,
but those kind of other entanglements that mm-hmm. have been like crushes mm-hmm. or emotional affairs or mm-hmm. whatever you want to call those attractions that we have to people. We're almost always, those things tell us a story about ourselves and where we come from psychologically.
Right, right. So, yeah, I have a little bit of experience.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that you're going to be such a voice of experience. We're going to need all that we can get. So let's get to it, Steve.
Yeah.
Our listeners will know that we often will read the letter and talk a bit and then call our guest on. But today we decided to do a little differently and just bring our guest on mm-hmm. and we're going to discuss two letters with him. It's Jay Ponteri, a really interesting writer who has thought about this forbidden crush situation a whole lot,
yes.
To the point that he wrote a whole book on it, a memoir called Wedlocked.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk to Jay.
Hi.
We're not calling him today. He's in the studio.
I'm here.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Hi. Just to give you a real quick summary, Cheryl has never had a real crush on anyone, nor has she ever really been disappointed by a love object, and I am literally a walking scar tissue. So, Jay, you know you wrote this book, Wedlock, since you wrote it, but you don't know that I read it early in my marriage and found it beautifully written and really unsettling. Because
it's a completely unsettling book.
Right. So, well,
tell us about it.
Yeah.
It's a description of me 10 years ago in a marriage that is no longer in existence.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's a description of just being incredibly lost in a marriage and really just pushing away mm-hmm. the person that I love. And one of the ways that I did that the book really describes is just really by dreaming way outside of my marriage. And, you know, crushes and infatuations, I think, are very normal things because they're relational. And my experience was that I hid all of that. So the marriage, a marriage often becomes this thing that we hide stuff around. I mm-hmm. think that's also normal, but it can also be really difficult if you're hiding some of the things that you really need to encounter mm-hmm. in your life. So the wedlock is just a sort of meditation, a consideration. Right. I was writing it as it was happening. And I was really looking for, when I was struggling with my marriage, I started just looking for a ton of books about marriage. And, you know, a lot of novels came to mind, like Paula Fox's Desperate Characters and James Salter's Light Years. Mm-hmm. And I love those novels. But I felt like I needed to see, you know, just somebody's thoughts. I needed a man's thoughts, a man who felt stuck and alone. And I couldn't find it. So I think I just started writing it. You know, I was still a fiction writer at the time. So I was under the illusion that I was writing like notes.
Sometimes that's how you have to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. The trick.
Yeah.
Like it's as if my body, it needed to share that.
That's what it felt like. And that's what was so unsettling.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that I felt I had access through this book to somebody who was, as you say, dreaming outside of the marriage, outside of that relationship. And I'm sitting there going, I'm just trying to get moored in this marriage.
Yes.
And I'm reading this illicit document that is about a kind of counter narrative. That's a guy who's totally allowed himself to, you know, dream and imagine outside the relationship. So I'm so interested to hear how you will respond to these letters in particular. Let's read the first one.
Let's get to the first one. I'll read it. Dear Sugars, I'm married and I have a crush. This isn't revolutionary. Crushes are normal and healthy. And many of us, both married and single, have navigated those tingly butterflies and midnight fantasies when we're in a long-term relationship. It's not even him. It's not his blue-gray eyes. It's not his sarcasm. It's not his work ethic. It's not his passion. It's the idea of someone new and dynamic and successful, and everything my husband is not. This crush is an entrepreneur. He's smart and quick-witted and savvy in ways my scientist husband will not be. That's not to say my husband isn't smart or witty. He is, and I love him for it. But there's a new energy from this crush that I'm drawn to as I work to aggressively advance my career. Someone who understands the work I need to do to thrive in my industry. Someone who has been in the same trenches. Someone who makes me better. I get that. I get that we're drawn to who we need right now. And right now, I need passion and drive and career advancement. I see all of that sitting at the desk next to mine. My question isn't what to do. I'm confident that I will not act on this particular crush, no matter how many times he puts his hand on my arm when we get drinks after work, no matter how many times he glances at me and in a split second we're agreeing or disagreeing or bursting into laughter. This is hard, undoubtedly, but this immediate temptation isn't my challenge. My question is, when does this end? When do I say that my crush on my boss is the temporary need and my love, companionship, and camaraderie with my husband is the long-term solution? When do I decide that a good father for my kids is more important than a business sounding board for my career or a stable financial partner? When I decided to marry my husband, I made a long list of pros and cons. There were actually more cons than there were pros. Cons like he lived in another city, I would have to leave my job, he was less career-oriented than I was. But the pros list were the items I kept being drawn to, the ones I kept retracing with my pen as I stared at the list in my bedroom. I love him. I love his family. I love how he appreciates the things about me that I appreciate about myself. I love how he's detail-oriented when I'm strategic and big picture. I love that he's practical when I'm in the clouds. I love that he brings me a gift on every business trip he ever takes, no matter what. I love that he compliments my weaknesses while admiring and acknowledging my strengths. I'm sad when I'm not with him. I'm better when I'm on his team. I just want to laugh and be happy and feel valued. I get that from my husband, but I could also get that from this crush. Being married can become routine. Crushes and new relationships are all excitement and change and confidence and energizing for my nomadic spirit. Should I constantly iterate on that pros and cons list? As I grow and evolve my needs, should I always be seeking out the partner who is right immediately rather than the partner who is right for who I think I'll be in 10 years? How do we ever know what's temporary and what's forever? With love, crushed.
Crushed. I'm absolutely fascinated, Jay, because of the parallels, you know, to what you've written in Wedlock, what your reaction to this letter is.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One, Crush clearly loves her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some people have secret relationships because maybe they need to. Maybe they need to actually really encounter mm-hmm. something in themselves, or they need to somehow pulverize their marriage irrevocably.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't sense this in this letter. I mean, that sort of paragraph where she just repeats, I love this about my husband
yeah.
and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really struck by that. And she was really focused on personality traits. And that was my experience in being married very early on, that I was really sort of really focused on what my wife was not and really dreaming outside to people who I thought embodied some of these personality
right.
traits. And I actually now I sort of understand that that's a very surfacey way, I think, to engage in love, because I'd be curious to hear if you guys feel this, that in any long-term relationship, we end up moving beyond all that personality mm-hmm. traits and sort of going into what is kind of unseen spaces. Like
mm-hmm.
we discover something unseen about ourselves, or we realize that our spouse, after 5 years, after going through difficult experiences and beautiful experiences, that we see them as entirely something other,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that happens through being open and through being expressive. So that was my first reaction, was not to pay too much attention to those personality traits.
Right. I was struck by that part of the letter too, and it made me think about going through my own divorce of my first marriage, and also
mm-hmm.
friends I've had who are in the midst of divorces or have gotten divorced. And almost always the observation that is made about the partner, you know, is like, well, he wasn't like that when we were together. You know,
mm-hmm.
now he's changed, or I've
yes.
changed. And there's sorrow in that. Like, well, mm-hmm. if he'd been that way when we were married, I wouldn't have felt unhappy in the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is what happens when people go through big transitions like divorce. But the other part of it is what happens when we stay too locked in to our ideas about ourselves and about our partners in a long-term relationship. This is the way you are. This is the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
And we march forward like that. And in so many ways, you know, you want your partner to be different, and yet you are the person who's preventing him or her from being able to be different
mm-hmm.
because of the ideas that you've projected onto the person or the relationship you have. And I picked up on that as well in this letter from Crush. Like, here's the object of my crush. He's this way. Here's my husband. And they're in opposite corners, right? And so this letter writer is almost like trying to weigh these qualities. Do I like this more? Do I like that more? And, you know, I also think part of the disturbance is when she says, when does it end? That question, what I read into it is, when will I stop being attracted to a whole wide range of people
right.
and qualities? And
right.
the answer is never.
Never. You know, what I hear from this letter is a woman who doesn't accept compromise with the world and with the world of love, and in particular marriage. And I completely understand that. You know, all of us could make a pretty long list in a very short time of things that we wish our spouse or ex-spouse or partner did, or, you know, had interests in, or personality that would foster the blank in us. You must, Crush, accept that your husband has all these amazing things. And he's never going to be an entrepreneur, and he's never going to be the go-getter mentor person
mm-hmm.
that you want. He doesn't have all of those things, but those things are in the world, and it's not forbidden for you to go out and plug into that energy and receive friendship and guidance and maybe even a little erotic buzz. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I'd argue that that is maybe something that's necessary for you to feel whole and complete. Just don't expect that your husband over and over again is going to supply that. I think marriage, he asks, when do I determine that who I need right now is who I need forever? Well, marriage is the place where you say, I'm going to have one central, close, intimate, sexual, romantic, emotional, psychological connection, and I want that to last forever. That's what marriage is. Otherwise, you don't get married. But that doesn't mean that that person suddenly becomes the person who fulfills all your needs. It just means that you learn to manage your disappointment about the things they can't supply you and find in a healthy way sources of that energy, feedback, support, guidance. And it seems to me that's what you're doing, Crushed. And, you know, I don't think that's worth freaking out about unless it is so persistent that it's, you know, making you feel a deep sense of I'm questioning whether I really do love my husband and whether those boxes are enough. But that's not what I hear in the letter.
No, I agree. It sounds so much like she loves her husband.
Right.
It's a pretty glorious list of qualities that she recognizes in him and how she feels with him, what she gets from him. And, you know, when you say marriage is managing disappointment, I remember about 5 years ago, it just happened in a gesture. You know, you do something. I guess it's what nostalgia is. When this whole feeling, this whole experience sort of washes through you. It was in Portland. It was raining. I stepped out onto the porch and it was just this kind of romantic light and raining. I stepped into the street and I just had this palpable physical memory of what it felt like to be falling in love with somebody and to kiss somebody for the first time. And I had this sorrow.
Yeah.
If it works out, if my life works out the way I hope it will, if I stay married to my husband, Brian, who I love so much for the rest of my life, I'll never have that experience again.
Yeah.
And it was a real loss.
Yeah.
It was a real loss to just say, I'm not going to have this experience again. And also, I don't want to have this experience again, even though that's a fabulous experience, because I would prefer to have this other experience that does not allow me to have...
Right. Marriage becomes routine.
She recognizes it. And so I think I sense a piece of this in this letter. She's saying, you know, I want to be released from my longing, from my longing for variety, for novelty. And I think that, Crush, you never will be. That's the deal with monogamy, is that you're agreeing to never have that again. And so we have to do all these things that we talk about all the time, all these other tricks to make monogamy interesting or compelling or acceptable. But ultimately, what you have to do is say, it's actually a rational decision you make about what kind of life you want to have. And it's perfectly valid to decide you want to end your marriage. If you really do want to have that other experience more than you want to have the marriage, that's also a valid choice.
Right.
But it is a choice. And I think when you make a choice, you feel power. You feel empowered about your life rather than the victim of it.
Yes. And also sometimes, as wedlock instructs us, that choice makes us realize what we haven't chosen. And that's what Crushed is describing, that she's saying, I got married. I know that I made that decision on the basis of a bunch of things that were super important to me. But the making of a choice, and this is where I see Crushed having trouble really with the idea of having to make that choice that you just talked about, means the foreclosing of those other possibilities. The foreclosing of finding that like coach, mentor, motivator, go-getter, quick-witted guy who is another path. It's what you talk about, you know, the other ship, the ghost ship that didn't carry us. And that's what she is confronting here and struggling with, but in a way that's real smart. She's thinking about why this guy is meaningful to her and how that reflects on what she wishes her husband had or quality she wishes her husband had. And the truth is, if she really drills down into it, she might have an experience similar to Jay's, right? Where she says, actually, I can't just say I've made this decision and I accept that I have a good husband who I love and I'm with him, but I'm going to seek friendship and counsel and maybe even a little erotic energy from the world. Maybe it's more persistent than that. And I think that's part of what wedlock documents is, as you say, somebody who centrally is dreaming outside of the marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this conversation. I would definitely give the advice to Crush to bring her husband into that conversation.
Definitely.
I think when there's a flirtation going on and it's incredibly secretive and unspoken, it sort of starts gaining this desperation.
Illicit power.
I think actually gets deflated a little when you actually start acknowledging some of what's going on. And because she clearly loves her husband and feels loved by him, I sense that that is present in her marriage. I think if she were to really share some of this with him, the sort of flirtation might lose some of its flavor.
Well, not to mention, too, just there's this age-old dynamic. Student has a crush on the teacher. Patient has a crush on the doctor. Employee has a crush on the boss. Like, there's that power differential that can be very alluring, I think, in a sort of psychological way that's not even conscious. And then you start the relationship and you find out that actually you were drawn more to the situation than the actual person.
That's right.
I'm suspicious of the crush that Crush has on her boss. Like, the minute that any of that would be actualized, the minute they slept together or kissed or whatever, all of those feelings of having a crush might just blow away because you were really attracted to a situation.
Right.
Or a dynamic.
Or a role, yeah.
Rather than an experience and a relationship. And, you know, one thing for sure, crush, you have a real relationship with your husband. And you have a real relationship with your boss, too, but it's not a romantic one. It's a mm-hmm. professional one. And so much of the way she talks about her feeling for him is connected to that professional dynamic. He's got what I want in terms of a career. You know, she even uses the word, she's aggressively pursuing her career. And so, you know, she wants to be her boss. Maybe that's it, crush. You don't want to fuck him. You want to be him.
Mm-hmm.
Story of my life.
Wow.
On that, very compelling, that's psychological.
That's awesome. That's
like, I'm being dead serious when I'm yeah. saying, I think there's something really interesting. Like, she over and over and over again says she wants to ascend professionally. Like, so it's no
yeah.
joke that, like, the person she has a crush on is essentially in the position she wants.
Right. No, absolutely.
So I think that's part
yeah.
of the, yeah.
Yeah. And she, as you know, I recognized her immediately when I started reading this letter because it was me. You know, again, being desirous of somebody who had embodied, as you said, embodied, Jay, the personality traits, the ambitions, the status in the world that we mm-hmm. want to have. That's a natural thing. And it might be like he's a great, you know, teacher for her. But
yeah.
she's
yeah.
also got a husband.
Or a dear friend.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think beneath the surface of this letter, this woman is struggling with what her identity is. And I think marriage, in a sense, and marriage to this particular man violates her sense of who she is. She sees herself as ambitious. She's nomadic. She describes all of these senses of who she is in the world that are unmoored by marriage and marriage to a guy who she sees as kind of stolid professionally and physically. He's going to anchor her with kids. So to me, what's revelatory in part about this letter is she's trying to work out who she really is. And the fact that she loves her husband, as she clearly does, is in violation of some pre-existing idea that she has about who she is, which we carry into our marriages. We think we're one way. And then the marriage, if it contradicts that, becomes an existential quandary. But there's no reason to feel that the choice to remain married and downgrade this crush or treat it as a learning opportunity rather than an illicit affair is going to close you off from your 10-year plan. But you have to, you know, talk with your husband and share with him that you are having these, I wouldn't even necessarily say, well, I'm having a crush and let me tell you all about it, but more that I have these ambitions and I'm starting to question whether I'm going to be able to be who I want to be in this marriage. Here are the things that I'm concerned about. And that for me is sort of at the top of the list, and facing herself that this is more a question about her own identity than it is about whether she's going to, you know, take anything further with the boss at work.
Let us move on to the second letter.
Yes.
Talking about embodying characteristics and traits. Steve, will you read the letter?
I will. Dear Sugars, I'm not sure where to begin. My husband and I started dating a decade ago and are now approaching our third wedding anniversary. I think it's fair to say that our lifelong commitment to each other was well thought out and given plenty of time. I love him dearly. He is my best friend and my better half. I'm more attracted to him each day, and my love for him continues to grow. We're currently trying to conceive and have found ourselves with the challenge of infertility. It has been over a year now, and my patience has worn thin while he wants to become a dad more than ever. As months and months have passed with no luck, I've begun to notice my attitude towards motherhood changing. I still want to be a mother someday, but I'm finding myself wanting to take a break from the pressure and daily tracking of a roller coaster ride. On top of it all, and which I believe is very much a part of the above problem, we only have sex about once every 2 weeks. Now, I know only for some couples would be a lot for others, but we are finally living under the same roof, and we've only been married for 3 years, for fuck's sake. Our intimacy shouldn't be dwindling already. I brought it up and attempted to have level-headed conversations about this numerous times, but he continually shuts those conversations down, and oftentimes it only makes his sexual confidence lower, which turns into a downward spiral in the bedroom. I often feel like I am more masculine and my husband is more feminine in our relationship, especially when it comes to sex. I try my odds damn near every day trying to get him in the mood or asking if he wants to have sex over and over and over again. I am declined. It's beginning to gnaw at me, Sugars. A person can only take so many shutdowns in a row. I'm a confident, vivacious, and sexual person, and I feel like I'm married to a man who lacks confidence, lacks energy, and has a very minimal sex drive. So where am I going with this? Well, lately I've been preoccupied with the thoughts of other men. And one of those men is my brother-in-law. Quite frankly, he looks damn near identical to my husband, but he is younger and taller and has the mid-20s energy to him. I want to fuck him. I fantasize about it often, actually dreaming about intimate moments with him. The other thing is, this brother-in-law has made many passing comments and flirtatious actions towards me, as though he is in fact attracted to me too. There seems to be a potent sexual chemistry and tension between us that I can't quite explain. Sugars, what do I do? I feel sexually trapped. I feel myself not just loving this brother-in-law, but almost falling in love with him. When I think about him someday being in a serious relationship and then at some point getting married, my heart breaks with jealousy. I don't know what to do. My husband is my world. I don't want to feel this way towards my brother-in-law. I just want to feel desired and loved in an intimate way by my husband. Help! Sincerely, horny and afraid.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
Oh, dear.
Oh no.
Horny and afraid.
Yeah.
I'm horny and afraid for you.
Yeah.
I really am. This is a real, this is a problem. This is a problem.
Yes.
It's
yes.
One thing to want to fuck like some guy. It's another thing to want to fuck your husband's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
There's like laws like in the Bible and stuff about
that. Yeah. Well, it's like, and we've had these sorts of letters before where, you know, somebody will write and be like, my husband cheated on me with my best friend. It's so much more damaging when there is that intimate relationship with that other object of desire. I know what I think.
Yeah.
I want to hear what you guys think.
Oh. So we have to show you ours.
You have to show me yours. Yeah.
I love the letter. I have to say, I think she is incredibly aware of what she wants and what she needs.
Mm-hmm.
I have been reading Letters to a Young Poet by Rilke, and he has this amazing paraphrasing, but it's essentially like we possess our own bodies so that we can make our way out of our bodies. And I feel her really wanting to possess her body in a couple different ways. One, she wants to have a break from trying to procreate and have this baby. And that is incredibly stressful,
right,
emotionally and physically.
Right.
And I hear her on that. I would advise her to let herself, to let her body have a break from the idea of getting pregnant or being a mom, and also welcome those feelings of not wanting to be a mom into her life, because those are normal feelings. And if she does get pregnant, she will have to have them then and grapple with them then.
Mm-hmm.
I just really felt heartbroken when she's describing talking to her husband about this and the way he shuts those conversations down. There's something that maybe he's fearing. That's another case where we can so easily hide things in our marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, maybe they do have a different libido or sex drive. I think that actually changes at every different point in a marriage. But I think she has the right to fully express her libido and her body, you know.
It's not just that she wants to have sex. She wants to feel like her husband's attracted to her. And she absolutely should feel that. And the husband can't just shut down those conversations. To me, you need to see a counselor. If you cannot have those conversations with your husband in a way that gets beyond, are we going to have sex in this moment, to, do you desire me? What you're not going to get necessarily, and I say this from some personal experience, is that your husband desires you at the level of intensity and frequency that you desire him. That's what needs to get sorted out. And it seems so complex. And it seems that the husband's posture is so evasive. He feels humiliated. And it might be that he can't get his wife pregnant, quote unquote. And it might be that he has a different libido. And it might be that her posture, her aggressiveness about it, is turning him off or inhibiting him or humiliating him. We don't know exactly, but all of those are possibilities. And they're complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot initiate those conversations and have them shut down, because they're really at the center of your marriage at this point. And it's not that the brother-in-law means nothing, but it seems to me it's a pretty clear indication that this crush is saying, I want my husband with a libido that makes me feel loved and desired like I deserve. And that's what's eating away at her, and that's what's feeding this fantasy, because
yeah.
The brother-in-law is throwing her that exciting new crush energy.
Yeah. I think that talking about desire, that's really talking about attention.
Yes.
And engagement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not about how many times a week you have sex or don't have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think horny and afraid is essentially feeling abandoned in her sexual connection with her husband.
Mm-hmm. And resentful.
And so she's turning it to the closest available source. And here we are, you know, this guy who looks just like her husband, conveniently.
Young, hot.
And who also, you know, he's alluring for those reasons, but also he's the ultimate forbidden.
Right.
I mean, it's as close to committing incest as you can be without actually committing incest.
And it's a
They're
punishment.
Related by marriage. And it would hurt him. It would be a deep betrayal.
Mm-hmm. It would be a big mess.
It would be a
no
big mess.
No to the brother-in-law.
And it's also, no you know, when we were reading this, there's this book. What book is it? It's one of the dirty books I have. You know, those erotic stories,
mm-hmm.
like the dirty books of stories for women.
Mm-hmm.
There's this one. It's one of my favorite little tales. I haven't read it for a long time, but it's this woman has sex with both her husband and her husband's brother in like a barn or something.
Yeah,
I gotta find
you
it.
Had me until
and
barn.
It's
okay.
So hot, like yeah. no, like yeah. she's like cleaning the stall. No, he's cleaning the stalls. The brother-in-law, and then it's like,
yeah.
oh, I always wanted to, you know. And then they do, and then the husband walks in, and they have this threesome. And I would never want to do this in my life. Thank God my husband doesn't have a brother, right?
Or
but,
a barn.
But it's very hot. It's yeah. a very hot situation. And so that's the other part of this. Like this is
saucy.
Fantasy.
It's good
material.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this isn't where you know I was going. We got off the rails there. But where I was going. Horny and afraid is, first of all, I do think that in real life, you shouldn't act on this fantasy. My advice to you is to really try to back away from that brother-in-law situation right now and turn your attention back to your husband. I teach every year at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve, you teach with me every year now mm-hmm. at this writer's camp we have.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the early days, I would go and teach like 20 students and other workshops were happening at the same time. And Esalen is all about creativity and spiritual awakening and yoga and all. So all of these really enlightened people would be there teaching their enlightening workshops alongside mine. And I'll never forget one of the first years that I taught my writing workshop. There was this couple on the faculty, this woman, I don't remember her name, flaming red hair, beautiful, like loud makeup and lipstick and dressed like a gypsy and all these colorful scarves. She was, I think, about 80. Her husband was about 80. They're like sitting on each other's laps and, you know, and caressing each other. And I said to them, well, what workshop are you guys teaching? Of course, they're teaching that, you know, keep your sex life, you know, invigorated.
Yeah.
How to keep the passion alive in your monogamy. And clearly they were passionate. They teach this workshop together, helping other couples reengage. And I said to them, what's the secret? And the woman looked at me and she said, You kiss every day. And it wasn't about how many times you have sex. It wasn't about this or that, or he wants to do this and I want to do that in the bedroom. It was about, again, about that attention, paying attention.
Right.
And paying attention in a particular way that is about the sensual, about the carnal, and the erotic. And I think, Horny and Afraid, you as a couple have lost your
yeah,
way.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you need to run off to a workshop. I mean, honestly, I've mm-hmm. thought about doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about doing that, either
mm-hmm.
of you? Attending?
Yes.
Have you done
yeah,
it?
Yeah. No.
I'm sort of embarrassed to think about signing up for one of those workshops, but
mm-hmm.
I think my life would be better for it. When you've been with somebody for as long as I've been or you've been or you
mm-hmm.
were, or, you
mm-hmm.
know, like that you do need to remember again to
right.
pay attention.
And this really connects to what you were saying, Jay, which is, again, sort of swimming beneath the surface of the letter, which is that they're trying to conceive that sex has become procedural
yes.
and result-oriented. And, you know, there's a wonderful story that I recommend that everybody read, but especially you, Horny and Afraid, which is a story, Generate, Procreate, by Anthony Doerr. It's mm-hmm. in his collection, The Memory Wall. It's an absolutely wrenching story about a couple trying to get pregnant. And what it documents, I mean, the writing is just crushingly beautiful, but what it documents is how that process really humiliates and reduces what we think of as this pursuit of pleasure and intimacy to a kind of medical procedure in which both parties are somehow defective. It's the ultimate kind of realization that those two functions, like God played this cruel trick of twining the thing that is central to our sense of relational connectedness and identity and intimacy and our bioevolutionary mandate to continue to procreate the species. I mean, I don't know if that's exactly where the problem started here, but probably the fact that they're trying to conceive is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. And it's also even changing the way you are thinking about this, horny and afraid. You've reduced sex to a carnal desire and you have no interest in being a mom. And that might be a response to the fact that you're angry and disappointed, both at the failure to conceive and at your husband for not meeting you there. You know, there's a lot of understandable resentment and anger, and it's expressing itself in a way in the sort of the ultimate punishment, which would be to fool around mm-hmm. with your husband's younger, hotter brother, yeah. right?
Well, and she does say, she says, I still want to be a mom someday.
Right.
But she doesn't feel the need to make that the priority right now.
And, you know, that's the conversation you need to have with your husband. And it cannot take place within the context of a disappointing request for intimacy or initiation of, it has to be in a time and space that's outside of the cycle of asking, because every night in this household or every couple of nights, the same ritual plays out. She's secretly hoping that he'll suddenly be turned on and want to have this wild sex. And he's secretly dreading that his wife is going to ask for something that he can't give her.
Yeah. Neither side of that is fun.
Right.
I mean, I don't envy him either, yeah. to be the one who's not into it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Jay, do you think that she should tell her husband that she's fantasizing about her
No.
No.
No. That's
I know before yeah. I was talking about being very transparent, but I think we are and should be allowed a private life and secrets yeah. and fantasies. I mean, they can't be secrets that are damaging ultimately or that keeps us from receiving and reaching mm-hmm. for our partner. Those can be dangerous secrets, mm-hmm. I think. In this case, I don't think I would not tell him. I mean, I was actually questioning because she's sensing that the brother is into her. If she senses that, mm-hmm. that's probably the case. And I would then be questioning why he's making that choice mm-hmm. to sort of have this incredibly taboo experience. It yeah. has nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with the sort
brother,
of family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think she can keep that to herself. I also think that she can not feel ashamed.
Yeah.
Like, sort of combine it with, like, just knowing that she's right now really wanting to be a more sexual creature. And that the rest of the stuff is just content. It's just like content. It could be another man, you know?
Right. And it almost always, I mean, it always is essentially and ultimately about the self.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, who am I and what do I want and how have I expressed that? How well have I expressed that to this person I've decided to spend my life with? Mm-hmm. And I think in both cases, both of these letters, these women need to speak with a deeper candor and I guess a greater sense of confidence, too.
Yeah.
To say, this is actually important to me. Mm-hmm. This actually goes to the core of like what I want in my life.
Right.
And if we can't be compatible in that, something else has
right.
to happen.
Look, I've had all these crazy crushes in my life. And the problem wasn't that I had those crushes. Those were actually beautiful, intense, wonderful experiences. I was really feeling intense desire, which is the human engine. And that's what these women are feeling. Their engines are revving up. It might be completely unattainable and in some ways self-destructive, but that high rev that you're at, especially on Valentine's Day, is the signal that like these crushes are telling you that you need to settle up with your loved one, your spouse, and tell them what the contents of your heart. And they might even involve a barn and a brother.
All right, Valentine's Day, that's it. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
What do you think? So this is our Valentine's Day episode, and I was curious, Jay, to ask you about what this day means to you, if it means anything, and how has that changed for you over time, if it has?
It means to me now to practice, this may sound woo-woo, but to really practice some self-love. To really like love myself on this day for sort of the place I am, which is newly divorced and being a single dad, and really knowing that the difficult experiences I've had have brought me to this sort of a new space. I kind of want it to be a day when I just I love everybody that I'm with, and through being present, just by being present with people, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. Hmm.
What about you, Cheryl Strayed?
Cheryl Strayed. Well, I guess I'm with Jay. You know, I don't think it has to be a day about romantic and erotic love. It can be. If that's what you're in that moment and you want to celebrate that, I think that's beautiful. I also think it's really sweet to, you know, the kids exchanging the cards or, you know, having a drink with a friend and talking about why you love each other, or, you know, there are all these different ways to celebrate love. And I hope that Valentine's Day can sort of, that we can embrace that, if not mm-hmm. in the culture, at least here on Dear Sugar Radio. Mm-hmm.
And if you are harboring a forbidden crush, some big overweening love that's full of desire, the human engine, but also a kind of doubt and self-destructiveness, figure out what it means.
Yeah.
Thank you to Jay for...
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean,
we love talking to you.
This is awesome.
It's fantastic to spend time with somebody who nearly ruined my marriage. Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR. We're produced and edited by Lisa Tobin, who is the recipient, I am absolutely certain, of like her mailbox must just be jammed full of Valentines.
It should be.
Candies,
I have
chocolates.
A crush on her.
Exactly. Saddles, hay.
An unrequited crush, probably.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. We are recording at Talkback Sound and Visual here in Portland, Oregon. Josh Millman is our engineer. You should listen to the show and subscribe, if you would, on iTunes, and also go to the WBUR Dear Sugar page, where you will find links to Jay's book and the other books we've discussed.
The dirty books I mentioned.
The dirty books that we will find the title.
We'll find the
and
title.
And it will be red underlined. And also write to us at dearsugarradio@gmail.com. We can't wait.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.